This podcast is brought to you by Intel vPro.
Virgie Tovar is a social media influencer, and she often talks about issues related to body image.
We need to realize that body positivity, body acceptance, whatever you want to call it, it's not just an idea. It's not something like, oh, I learned a recipe, or like, oh, I learned a hack.
Virgie identifies as a fat person. She has spent more than a decade talking about the importance of fat acceptance and body positivity.
We don't like our bodies. We are afraid of food. We are afraid of fatness because we've been traumatized. Because we have been traumatized by fat phobia and by food shame.
Then, about a year ago, something weird happened. She got an email asking her to promote GLP-1 drugs. These are the massively popular injectable drugs like Ozempic or Wegovy that people are using for weight loss. At first, Virgie ignored it. Why would anyone think that she would promote these drugs?
I think I even deleted a few without even thinking to keep the documentation because I thought of them as one-off spam emails. But
Virgie started seeing other fat activists post about getting similar requests from marketing agencies, asking them to promote these drugs. And she realized those emails were real. It turns out this was part of a bigger plan to get plus-size influencers to promote drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy. And it's become divisive. Shane O'Neill is a style reporter for The Post, and he has been talking with influencers like Virgie about how they see these drugs.
This is a really complicated issue because it butts up against all these questions about what constitutes self-acceptance, what constitutes health, what constitutes public health versus private medical decisions. It brings up just a lot of really thorny issues and really emotional issues.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Martine Powers. It's Tuesday, May 14th. Today, what to make of the popularity of drugs like Ozempic. We're going to hear from a doctor who practices size-inclusive medicine, and she'll explain how she's talking about these drugs with her patients. But first, we'll hear my conversation with Shane, where we dive into why these drugs have got people asking big questions about self-love and self-acceptance. So, Shane, tell me about how these companies are interacting with the influencers and the body positive and fat activism communities.
The way that these drug companies are interacting with these communities is varied. One way that we're seeing this pop up is just that their own internal marketing campaigns are aping some of the language or topics of discussion that have been discussed or used in body positive communities for a long time. I'm thinking specifically of Weight Watchers.
There are so many factors that impact our weight and our eating behaviors and our exercise behaviors, physiology being one of them. Now, medications, they actually demonstrate this.
Which has really adopted the idea of weight stigma in a lot of their marketing that they've been using for their new program, which connects their users with injectable weight loss drugs.
They change people's experience around food. And it helps people to recognize that it was never really about willpower in the first place.
Now, weight stigma is something that the fat acceptance movement has been talking about for a long time. That's usually about trying to get legal or legislative changes or at least societal structures to change to be more accommodating and more accepting and less hostile to fat bodies. Whereas the Weight Watchers ads, their framework for ending weight stigma is like essentially finding a doctor who will prescribe you injectable weight loss drugs without stigma. Now, that is a very real issue for a lot of people. There's a lot of people who do feel ashamed to ask their doctor about certain medical options that they have, especially as it relates to their weight. But it's sort of a new way of looking at the concept of weight stigma. And some of the people I talk to are not super comfortable with that permutation of it. Another example is just a lot of people who have social media presences getting lots of emails, sometimes like multiple emails a day from kind of shady med spas that will be like, you know, we'd love for you to join our partnership program. We offer these places you can go and these online medical consultations that can get you hooked up with these injectable drugs. Now, to be clear, these are not the pharmaceutical companies themselves that are contacting these people in these cases. It's third parties that are working to connect people with these drugs.
Can you tell me about some of the conversations you've had with some of the people who have basically gotten these offers of like, hey, like, if you wanted to like help advertise this or spread the word about the benefits of this drug, like, we would love to have you on board. When they get approached with those kinds of offers, like, how do they navigate that decision?
So people I talked to who had gotten some of these offers, some of them, like Virgie Tovar, she's been really public about how she finds this really inappropriate and how she finds these offers ridiculous because they run counter to her sort of personal ideology. There's another person I talked to, Jessie Diaz Herrera. She's a personal trainer who is really active in body acceptance and body positivity. She posted a rant to social media, a video of herself sort of railing against these offers.
Ooh, if I get another email. From a medical wellness company offering me money, offering me influencer programs to shoot myself up with drugs to lose weight, I'm gonna throw my computer, I swear. Let me tell you something, if some of your favorite fat influencers start doing paid campaigns for this, it's because they sold themselves into diet culture, period.
On the other hand, I also talked to people who were part of a marketing campaign from Weight Watchers called the GLP-1 House, who said it was a great opportunity for them. I spoke to a guy named Jake Beaven Partial and a woman named Kiki Monique. Both of these people were influencers who had already been documenting their weight loss journey with GLP-1 injectables. And based on that, Weight Watchers had approached them with this opportunity. Both of them had really positive things to say about their experiences, and both of these people would generally consider themselves to be part of the body positive movement as well.
And what do they have to say about, like, when you say that they had positive experiences, like, what was their argument for why this was, in fact, the right decision for them?
Kiki Monique said something that stuck with me a little bit, which is she said, I don't care what size I am. She said, I don't care if I'm a size 18, 16, 14. I wanted to lose weight so that my back wouldn't hurt. And connecting with people who were also on this journey was really helpful for me.
I just want people to understand, like, it is not this magic pill. It is not this easy solution. Like, it's been over a year. Yes, I've lost 65 pounds. And it's the first time in years the scale has moved for me, which is, like, huge. But more importantly than that, I learned that I wasn't doing anything wrong. Like, it wasn't my fault. Like, I actually... my body couldn't lose the weight no matter what I did. I was eating and I was trying to work out and the things weren't happening. And I still felt like crap. And it was just like, there is a medicine available to me that can make the things that I'm doing actually effective.
I think what I have found interesting about your reporting on these kind of questions that are being grappled with in these influencer communities about, like, what does it mean if I do or don't decide to partake in this new world of these drugs? I think it really mirrors a lot of conversations that regular people are having in their own lives about seeing the ads on TV, seeing the Ozempic ads and the Mounjaro ads and the Wegovy ads, and seeing Oprah on television talking about the benefits that she's experienced from using these drugs, and just, like, weighing these questions in her own lives of, like, well, like, what am I supposed to think about these drugs? And is this something I should consider for my life? Can you talk a little bit about how you see this, like, tension playing out further out in the real world?
Further out in the real world, this tension is playing out in some ways in kind of ways that we've seen before culturally. And I'm thinking specifically that just the other day, fed to me in my algorithm on TikTok was someone had used the Ozempic theme song that was set to the Ozempic. I think they had just lifted that.
That song is stuck in my head now all the time because of how many ads I see on TV of, like,
Ozempic. People with type 2 diabetes are excited Ozempic, about the potential,
you know.
It was that audio, and then it was just a montage of celebrities who had lost weight. And, you know, no direct evidence that these people have necessarily taken GLP-1 drugs. But now it's entered the cultural conversation where if someone loses a significant amount of weight, especially if they're of a certain socioeconomic class, they can afford to find these drugs, pay for these drugs because they can be really expensive. And it's also gotten to the point where this is happening maybe in our private lives, where if you're seeing someone lose a significant amount of weight, maybe the reaction even just 5 years ago would have been like, wow, congratulations, or wow, how'd you do it? Are you exercising? Or, you know, like, or, you know, I was raised like you're not supposed to comment on people's bodies at all. Mm-hmm. But now there's another subtext there of saying like, oh, are you taking this drug? There's sort of two anecdotes that I can share about this, which is...
Yeah, I would love to hear them.
I mean, number one, I had put out, you know, I do this from time to time when I'm reporting on a story where in my personal networks, I just said like, hey, I'm writing about Ozempic. Does anybody have something to say? And I was surprised to find out just how many people in my personal network were taking these drugs, were taking these medical injectables. Lots of them were taking it specifically to lose weight. Some of them were taking it for type 2 diabetes. But I was struck by how many people I didn't know were taking these drugs that were. Also, how many of them said, like, this is just between you and me. This is really private. This is really personal. I can say from my own personal experience, I had an experience at a doctor's office that really stuck with me. I had gotten into a bicycle accident, so I had broken my wrist. So I needed to get surgery on my wrist as soon as possible. I'm of a BMI that a lot of surgeons won't perform surgery on you unless you get a cardiac clearance. So I had to go get an EKG from a doctor. Because I was in a hurry to get the surgery, I went to this doctor I had never met before because he could give me an EKG that day. And the first words out of his mouth when he walked in the room were, hey, big guy, have you heard about these injectable drugs? People are losing 50 pounds in 6 months. I can't think of another disease where someone, especially a doctor, would not ask me anything, wouldn't take any of my vitals, would just take one look at me and immediately basically diagnose me with a condition and suggest an injectable drug to cure it with. I guess what was new to me is that for these medical injectables, as far as we know, you might have to take them for the rest of your life in order for them to continue to be effective. I'm not opposed to that. I take HIV prevention medication that I plan to take for the rest of my life. I also take medication for depression that I'm planning on taking for the rest of my life, unless, you know, a new treatment comes that would let me stop it. So it's not that I'm opposed to those medical interventions. I just can't imagine a doctor walking in, never having met me, taking one look at me and being like, hey, you look gay. Have you tried PrEP? You know, or being like, hey, you look like you have depression. Like, you want to try this antidepressant? It's not that the treatment itself is off the table or even inaccurate necessarily, but I can't think of any other medical disease where a drug like that would be offered so glibly just from looking at me.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're saying is totally represents what I hear from a lot of people in my life. But I also think that there's a flip side to this that I am particularly fascinated by, which is that I think the assumption, and not to make too broad of overgeneralizations of how people are thinking about these drugs, but I think that there is this assumption that to take a drug like this for the purpose of weight loss is in and of itself an act of vanity. I feel like I haven't seen a lot of room for the middle of, you know, people do want to have control over their bodies. And when it comes to things like, you know, I am pre-diabetic and I think that this drug will help me avoid type 2 diabetes and the challenges that come with that, or that I have back pain, I have knee pain, I have hip pain. I find it difficult to like get around the world as a fat person. And I think that like some things would be easier if I were smaller, you know, that I feel like there's a lot of awkwardness around having that kind of conversation too. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is part of what's so complicated about all of these conversations is that you can't generalize about why people are taking these drugs, and you can't generalize about what is considered a successful course of action for them. But the conversation is sort of being flattened, I think. I think people don't think of this as being as complicated an issue or as complicated a drug as it is.
I'm curious, Shane, as part of your reporting, like, did you ever talk to anyone from Novo Nordisk about this drug, or like, do they ever get on the phone with you to talk through like what they see as the benefits of people considering this drug in their lives?
I never got anyone on the phone, but I did have some email exchanges with a spokesperson. An email I got wrote, "We are not here to denounce body positivity or detract in any way from the strides we as a community have made in inclusivity. The reality is that two truths exist. Obesity can impact health, but the discrimination, stigma, and shame experienced by people living with obesity for their weight is also very real." So they're taking the tact that these are two ideas that can exist simultaneously, which, by the way, is an attitude that some people in these communities also have.
It's all so complicated. How do you think that these drugs will change the conversation around size and obesity moving forward? And, like, is there room for both people taking these drugs if they find them helpful and also for body positivity?
Yes, is the short answer. I mean, I think that the concept of loving your body is a worthwhile concept. And it's funny that even merits mention, but I think it does. Mm-hmm. Compared to other diet fads, I think this is a mega trend and not a micro trend. I think that this is something that is going to permanently change the way that we understand obesity and weight loss and diet culture moving forward. As for what that looks like in the near and distant future, I'm real bad at predicting things. As I always say, the first time I heard Lady Gaga, I was like, oh, no one's going to listen to this woman in 2 years. So I would not be so foolish as to try to predict what the impact will be. I will say, though, this is a major shift in how we're understanding obesity in our bodies and the concept of fatness and the concept of weight loss and dieting.
Shane O'Neill is a style reporter for The Post. After the break, we'll hear from a family doctor about her approach to these weight loss drugs. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel vPro. AI PCs built for business with Intel Core Ultra processors and Intel vPro are optimized for hundreds of AI apps and tools to boost user productivity, all with AI-powered threat detection. Learn more at intel.com/itheroes.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
After hearing from Shane about his personal experiences of being offered these drugs by a doctor, I wanted to know how people in the medical community are thinking about these drugs. Like, when are they prescribing them? And how have these drugs changed the way that they're thinking about what it means to be healthy? So I decided to talk with someone who has spent a lot of time considering these questions. Dr. Mara Gordon is a family physician working in New Jersey. She practices what she calls size-inclusive medicine, which basically means that she doesn't direct her patients to lose weight. And if they come to her to lose weight, she tries to have discussions with them to understand what it is that they want to change about their life and the best way to do that. First, I wanted to hear what she thought of Shane's experience at the doctor. Shane's reaction was like, "This is weird. Why is my doctor immediately telling me that I need to lose weight?" And I'm curious, what is your reaction when you hear that story?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, first of all, that's horrific. I am so sorry that that happened to Shane. That really shouldn't happen to anybody. But unfortunately, I'm really not that surprised. I've heard so many stories like this from my patients. Yeah, it's really, really common.
Why do you think that is?
I think it really speaks to how deeply ingrained fat phobia is in medicine. I think it speaks to how deeply ingrained diet culture is in medicine. And by diet culture, I mean the multi-billion dollar diet industry, which tries to sell us all sorts of pills, potions, treatments, everything to convince all of us, fat people, thin people, everyone, that we need to be smaller. And I think diet culture is very, very alive and well in medicine. We're not immune to it. And I think what Shane unfortunately experienced is an example of fat phobia really sort of rearing its head in a setting that should be about his needs, right? And mm-hmm. what's going on with his body.
So given the fact that fat phobia does seem to be like really rampant in society and also in doctors' offices, how do you think healthcare is like grappling with these new drugs? Like how do these weight loss injectables kind of play out in a medical setting?
Oh, man, that's such a complicated question. So I find myself having a lot of discussions about weight loss because a lot of my patients still want to talk about it. They've been told their whole lives that they should lose weight. So, you know, it's not surprising that a lot of them come to me sort of seeking that out specifically. But I sort of made a decision a few years ago that I wasn't going to direct people to weight loss. I wish I could say that I always practice this way, but, you know, I learned in medical school that it was my job to tell patients to lose weight, to say, hey, have you, you know, thought about tracking your calories, I would say. Mm-hmm. And this is, I graduated med school about 10 years ago. And slowly over time, I started to realize that, one, you know, having this sort of weight-focused approach really didn't seem to be making my patients any healthier, right? My telling them to lose weight wasn't improving their blood pressure numbers, or wasn't improving their diabetes control. And then two, perhaps more importantly, me pushing weight loss really, really stigmatized my patients. They felt judged. They felt like they were being discriminated against. Mm. They felt uncomfortable in my care. So I just kind of experimented with it, and sort of slowly but surely, I stopped directing my patients to lose weight. As I started reading more about size-inclusive medicine, I realized that there's actually a lot of rigorous evidence that shows that this weight-focused approach can cause a lot of harm for patients, right? That patients don't come back to see us mm-hmm. when they feel stigmatized about their weight, right? And there's no way we can take care of them if they aren't even returning for a follow-up appointment. So there's a lot of data to back up an approach that doesn't center weight unless patients want to talk about weight.
I'm curious if you've had patients who come into your office and say, look, I have seen these ads on TV for these drugs that sound like they've really changed people's lives and helped them lose a lot of weight. I've talked to people at work or in life that have been on these drugs and they say really good things. I'm interested in taking these drugs too.
Totally. I mean, it happens every day.
Really, every day?
So, oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Yeah. I mean, really, just I think people associate coming to the doctor with a discussion about weight in a way that I really want to work to undo.
But when it comes to these drugs in particular, which I know are new to many of us in one way or another, like, how do you talk to them about it? Like, what are your concerns when it comes to these drugs? What are your curiosities about it?
I will say, you know, bodily autonomy, as I said, is just the core principle of what I do as a physician. I definitely prescribe these medications. I've actually been prescribing them since I became a doctor in 2015. They've been around to treat diabetes and to reduce risk of cardiovascular disease way before they were FDA approved for specifically for weight loss in mm-hmm. non-diabetic patients, right? So let's say I have a patient who doesn't have diabetes, doesn't have any evidence of cardiovascular disease, but they say they want to lose weight. So we try to explore that, right? Like, what are you hoping to achieve? What feels wrong in your life that feels related to related to your body size? And we have to get labs too, right? So it's rare that like a patient just shows up on my doorstep and like I'm immediately prescribing a GLP-1 agonist. We need to get to know each other a little bit, and that's one of the beautiful things of primary care is I get to know them over time, right? So yeah, I'll usually start the conversation by saying, like, what are your goals? I often find that a lot of people, their goals have to do with sort of mobility and energy levels. Like a thing I hear all the time is that, you know, I want to be able to keep up with my kids. Mm. I totally respect that. I have a 3-year-old. He's a maniac. yeah, chasing after him is very physically challenging work.
I think there are going to be a lot of listeners who hear this who have also thought about making this decision because they see the ads and because they have the conversations and they're like, maybe I should consider this, like maybe it would help me feel better or even like feel like I can be more active or look better or, you know, the range of reasons why that you mentioned you hear from your patients. So what is your advice for those people who are thinking about like, should I be talking to my doctor about this? Should I be advocating to get access to these drugs? Like, what would you tell them? And I'm curious what you tell your patients after you get to that point of asking them their why.
Yeah, well, I'll say that, you know, my practice is generally not to suggest GLP-1 agonists to patients who are non-diabetic. I have patients who are really happy with how they're doing using GLP-1 agonists. And I have a lot of patients who've stopped them because they hated the side effects.
Can you talk a little bit about those side effects?
Sure. Yeah. So most of my patients who've decided to discontinue using GLP-1 agonists are experiencing a lot of sort of stomach upset, basically. So feeling nauseated, vomiting, sometimes diarrhea, a lot of heartburn, just feeling kind of sick all the time, sick to their stomach all the time. And I mean, I had one patient who said, I'd rather be fat than feel terrible all the time. So I totally respect that. Mm. And that's a very reasonable decision, I think. I will say that I do think a lot of the emphasis on side effects and sort of safety profile of the medications kind of misses the mark, though. I would rather focus the conversation on why so many people feel like they need these medications, right? Mm-hmm. I think they're safe. They appear to be effective. The side effects are tolerable for some people, intolerable for others, but is the discourse sort of making people feel like they have to take these medications, right? That that we have to make our bodies smaller and that it's somehow sort of a ethical obligation to do so or an obligation to oneself. And that really concerns me.
I'm also curious about, like, effects even further than that. I mean, do we know if these drugs have any longer-term effects on your body or if there are reasons to be concerned about the prospect of taking them, you know, for years and years?
I don't think we know. I mean, they have been around for almost 20 years. I've been using them for almost 10 years that I've been in medical practice. Mm-hmm. I think it's quite likely that they're very safe. I do think that there's downsides to taking a medication for life, right? I mean, I talk about this with patients when we start high blood pressure medications or cholesterol medications, right? That, you know, they have to inject themselves once a week. They have to go to the pharmacy and pick it up. There's a cost associated with it, either one that they're going to pay out of their pocket or that they'll pay indirectly via their insurance.
But also there's the cost part of it too, right? That I think for a lot of people, it seems like this isn't really even an option because of the, you know, astronomical cost that a lot of people are being charged to get access to this.
Yeah, totally. I mean, in New Jersey, where I practice, I would guess that, you know, 85% of my patients are publicly insured, and New Jersey Medicaid will not cover GLP-1 agonists for weight loss specifically. So, you know, it's kind of even a non-starter with many, many, many of my patients.
So how do you think we should be thinking about these drugs moving forward?
I want to help create a world where body diversity is accepted and celebrated. To me, this is really, really important because it intersects with the way that we think about racism in our culture, the way we think about misogyny in our culture. And you can't talk about fat phobia without thinking about the way that we pathologize non-white bodies, the way that we think about women's bodies fitting into really, really narrow ideals of beauty and desirability. As a clinician, you know, my goal is to help my patients think through what their goals are for their own health and well-being. I mean, my field just needs to do better. Our patients deserve better. Stories like Shane's just I hear every day and are I mean, just unacceptable, right? Like, we need to do a better job. But I also am sort of allergic to the dogma of, well, you know, any kind of weight loss is, you know, a betrayal of the fat positive movement. I have some patients who really want to lose weight, and I respect that. I respect where they're coming from.
Dr. Gordon, thank you so much for walking through all of this with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for your interest in this topic. I really, really appreciate it.
Dr. Mara Gordon is a family physician in New Jersey. Before we wrap today, some news on what is wafting down from Canada. Plumes of harmful wildfire smoke. What we're seeing is the return of Canada's zombie fires. They're called that because these wildfires managed to burn through the winter, smoldering under layers of snow and then roaring back to life once the weather warms up. That is what's happening now. Hundreds of fires have erupted in Canada, especially British Columbia and Alberta. At least 500,000 acres have burned. And here in the U.S., that has led to air quality alerts in several states, including Minnesota and Wisconsin. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Sabi Robinson. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Lucy Perkins. Thank you also to Monica Campbell and Ariel Plotnick. I'm Martine Powers. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel vPro. AI PCs built for business with Intel Core Ultra processors and Intel vPro are optimized for hundreds of AI apps and tools to boost user productivity, all with AI-powered threat detection. Learn more at intel.com/itheroes.